Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Who was your favorite teacher? Why were they? And what positive impact did they have on you as a child that still resonates with you today? We're celebrating teachers during National Teachers Appreciation Week as we discuss the joys of teaching. My guests are Dr. Catherine Norris, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the Howard University School of Education, and Austin Wetherington. He's a teacher at Bishop John T. Walker School for Boys in D.C. I want to hear from our listeners tonight briefly, who was your favorite teacher and why were they your favorite teacher? You can call me at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Austin, Dr. Norris, thanks for coming in. Good to see you. This is your week.
Pleasure.
Yes,
pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Dr. Norris, let me start with you. You teach the teachers. How would you say that teachers and teaching has changed over the past, I don't know, handful of years?
Well, I think that most of us see what's going on in the news with teaching and with the teaching profession and education. So there have been a lot of changes, but a lot of things that are changing are kind of, it's kind of like the pendulum is swinging. So even though these things are new, these things are not new, right? So these things have happened to us before in education. So when we talk about changing, controlling the curriculum, refusing to allow us to teach what we need to teach, all of these things that are happening now, these things have happened to us before. So we see some changes, but we see some things that are staying the same. Those of us who've been in education for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. You know, Austin, you have compared to, Dr. Norris, you've not been in education a long time, but you've been in long enough to kind of see the lay of the land. Do you feel appreciated?
Absolutely. I think it's an interesting question, though, because you kind of feel it from the students. You feel absolutely appreciated from the students. But then sometimes, you know, when it comes to parents or when it comes to staff and the work that you do, you may not feel as appreciated. But I've been blessed that at our campus with our leadership as well as our parents, I feel so welcomed. I'm always reminded of why I do the work that I do almost every day. And it's one of the most like reinvigorating feelings to know that your work is not in vain and that you're all on the same team together. And, you know, we're letting each other know that we appreciate each other, mm-hmm. you know, this process.
How has teaching changed for you? This is what, your fourth?
This will be actually, this is year six.
Year six.
And
okay.
I want to thank the good doctor here because we've had a couple Howard students in my classroom as well as in our building. We have a graduate right now, Ms. Kennedy Reed, so just want to shout her out. Howard has been a supplier of teachers and residents and up-and-coming teachers that come through our hallways and help out our students. So, yeah, we have a great partnership with Howard.
What's the most difficult thing about teaching for you though these past 6 years?
Mm. That's a good one, Harold. That's a good one. I think that there is, big picture, I think there's I teach black boys. So I think there's some apathy around what they can do in the classroom. So I think some of the biggest issues has been around getting people to do more and essentially not accept the apathy that we can't do certain things or there are certain limitations. But like, no, there is no limitations. Like, let's not be apathetic towards some of the things. Let's actually be proactive and get our hands dirty and see what we can come up with. So for me, I would say the biggest challenge is like the general apathy around black male education.
Mm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is National Teacher Appreciation Week, and we are talking about the joys of teaching. Mm-hmm. We are talking to teachers tonight, but we're asking our listeners to share with us who was their favorite teacher and why. Karen, calling from Laurel. Thanks for calling, Karen. What's on your mind?
Yes, good day. Thank you so much. I want to say happy Teachers Appreciation Week for all the teachers and the educators. You're definitely appreciated for the work that you do. I wanted to make a couple of quick mentions. One, my favorite teacher takes me all the way back to fourth grade. Her name was Miss Barbara Harris at Amadon Elementary School. That faculty teachers also did community work. They visited you at your home in the community. And I also wanted to make mention of a principal at my junior high school who was very influential in helping me to become the person I am today. So thank you so much.
Karen, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Norris, you also have a broader perspective about what new teachers must face after the pandemic, the pay situation, as well as the situation that we've seen most recently in Newport News with a teacher being shot. What impact does that have on instruction for you? What kind of conversations do you have with, you know, young people who are still passionate about getting into this career field?
Mm-hmm. So we see this because I'm seeing it at two levels. So one, at Howard University, I talk with my faculty and my faculty share with me how we have to first put the social and emotional needs of the students that are in our teacher education program first. And this is something that we're doing with them. And then this is something that we're training or preparing them to do in the classroom. So it can't just be that they learn how to teach reading and writing. They have to understand everything that goes along with it, and they have to be able to focus on what's happening, because with this whole online remote learning, there was a lot of stuff that was going on, right? We're dealing with isolation, we're dealing with fear, we're talking about the pandemic. Even now that we're coming out of it, we're talking about getting students back used to being face-to-face, or teachers back into the classrooms. So our students know that they focus on the whole child, and it's just not instruction. They're focusing on community. They're focusing on those parent partnerships and social and emotional development.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. James, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, James. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to, first I wanted to say that I have a family of educators. My mom was a educator for 38 years in DC public schools, but we grew up in PG County. And my fifth grade teacher, Imogene Woodley, really helped develop my leadership skills that helped me to ascend to leadership positions in DC government and other positions also. So I really want to honor my fifth grade teacher, Ms. Imogene Woodley.
Okay. All right. Well, James, thank you so much for your phone call. Tiffany, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I am a teacher at an elementary school. And like I was saying, most of the kids now, they are so much more advanced than we were. At the same time, they lack some of the skills that, you know, we were taught, the basic skills, writing, reading, all of this is different because the technology is taking over now. But it's rewarding to see you and see whatever you feel in the students and see their progress. And that's what keeps me driving. There are days, of course, when I'm ready to quit. but when I see that whatever, even if it's one student, if I see that I make a difference to that one student, that's what keeps me driving. That's what keeps me going. And mm-hmm. it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say that I'm so glad that the school I work for, we still do the home visits, which pushes the intention that it takes a village. And I appreciate the fact that we continue to do that, because it's lacking in a lot of places, and it makes a huge difference.
Tiffany, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about teachers. This is National Teachers Appreciation Week, and we're talking about the joys of teaching. My guests are Dr. Catherine Norris, chair of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the Howard University School of Education. And Austin Weatherington, he's a teacher at the Bishop John T. Walker School for Boys here in D.C. If you have a comment about your favorite teacher and why, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, Dr. Norris, one of the things that we've seen also, even pre-COVID, was the social action, the political action of teachers asking for more resources and more money. Why do you suppose that one of the most important jobs in this country, indeed on the planet, is still struggling to get what it needs to serve our young people?
So honestly, I think that we have an equity problem in this country when it comes to education and how we fund education. How we fund education is tied into property and taxes and those types of things. So we know that there are some school districts that are fully funded and they don't have a problem getting any of the resources that we need. But when it comes to Black and brown communities, we often find that we're short, because if we're in neighborhoods where we aren't bringing those types of real estate taxes in, we are receiving less funding. One of the things that I am excited about is the American Teacher Act that just passed, and they're talking about, increasing the salaries of teachers, increasing the funding, and those sorts of things. I don't think the act is going far enough, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction for us to think about how we fund those schoolings. Because what we learned in the pandemic, we talked about this whole idea of we don't have technology to give to these particular school districts in these neighborhoods. But when the pandemic hit, all of a sudden money was no issue, and all of the schools had computers and tablets for all the students. Mm-hmm. So was the issue that we didn't have the money, or was the issue that we didn't want to give the money in certain areas?
Mm-hmm. Austin, when, you talk about, as a Black man, mm-hmm. and the kind of instruction that you have for these young boys. Instruction, reading, writing, and arithmetic are one thing. But also, talk to me about the mentoring piece, mm-hmm. when, as we know, a lot of times, a lot of these young Black boys don't get the proper mentoring, do not see positive role models. What do you believe is your role in that?
Man, you're asking some ringers here, Harold. You're asking some ringers.
Well, yeah, but I know you can answer it. I know you got this.
I think when I first started, there was a bit of perhaps some added pressure, because I was thinking about that in the front of my mind too, in the sense of, I may have to be more than a teacher to some of my students. But it took about a year of being in the classroom and getting more comfortable to understand that, no, you don't necessarily have to overextend yourself in ways that you think they need. All you really have to do is be there for them, be there consistently, be there honestly, show up as someone who isn't their friend, but is somebody who they feel like they can trust.
Give me an example.
So when I first started teaching, I call the first year like a haze for most people. I mean, you're going to have a hard time getting the classroom quiet. You're going to have a hard time doing everything, getting them back and forth to lunch, bathroom. There's going to be so many things that you just necessarily didn't plan for that you're like, man, what do I do? Especially if you're teaching elementary school, and there's 20, 22, 23, 24 kids in there and you're by yourself. And there's moments like that where there's a seeming crisis where you have to kind of slow down, think your way through it, and essentially show them that everything's going to be all right. I've always used a tough love approach, and I think that kids really like the idea of, like, I get on them, and then I show them, like it's the bitter and the sweet. Like, and once they see that I have that range with them, I think it shows them that, yeah, I'm going to make sure that there's structure here, but I'm also going to make sure that your voice is heard. Yes, I'm going to say, no, you can't go to the bathroom right now, but when it's time, you can. Like, they understand that it's nothing's ever final, and they have a voice, and I think that allows them to trust me, and that allows us to engage in the learning process a little bit more, you know. So, yeah.
Dr. Norris, who was your favorite teacher?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I went to school in the Philadelphia public school system. My third grade teacher, Mr. Morganti, was my favorite teacher. And he was my favorite teacher.
At Abbott Elementary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that show.
Yes.
I love it.
So, I think he was my favorite teacher because of we did, everything was project based, you know, so we weren't sitting at desks doing worksheets like we were used to. We were actually hands on creating and working in groups and doing projects. And I absolutely adored him. And then when I became a teacher in the Philadelphia School District, I taught with him.
Wow.
And so I was able to nominate him for a Teacher of the Year, and he won an award for that. So I was really excited about that. I can never call him by his first name. I always called him Mr. Morgani. But
Your favorite teacher, Austin?
Man, this takes me back to fourth grade as well. Miss Millen, she was just the quintessential fourth grade reading and just literacy. She taught ELA, and she was just amazing. We started standardized testing in fourth grade and just really took us through the process, showed us how to be little people, as I say. She was one of the biggest mentors in my life from elementary school. So big, big shout out to Miss Millen, wherever you are.
My favorite teacher was actually a counselor, Henrietta Holmes at Eleanor Roosevelt High School in Greenbelt.
Yeah.
And I see her on Facebook all the time. You know, I would talk her head off, which is probably why she would just wave, but she don't need to talk to you anymore. Yeah. And also Darla Hines, who was an English teacher at Eleanor Roosevelt when I was there. But one of the interesting things is that, you know, my father was a teacher before he became a union official in D.C. My stepmother taught fourth grade. My mother was a teacher before she became a principal. My daughter is now teaching. My sister started as a teacher. I'm the only one that got it wrong. I'm the black sheep of the family.
It's not too late.
I was a substitute teacher for one day. I'm good. You know, my hat's off to you. Let me tell you. Listen, Terrence, Ken, Ms. Humphreys, we're going to talk to all of you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, National Teacher Appreciation Week, right here on The Daily Drum. Stay with us. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are celebrating teachers during National Teachers Appreciation Week as we discuss the joys and some of the challenges of teaching. My guests are Dr. Catherine Norris, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the Howard University School of Education, and Austin Wetherington. He's a teacher at Bishop John T. Walker School for Boys in D.C. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ms. Humphreys, thanks for calling from D.C. What's on your mind? Whoops, I'm sorry. There we go, Ms. Humphreys. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi. Good evening, Harold Fisher and Dr. Norris.
Good evening.
And Bishop Wetherington.
Good evening.
I am currently a fourth grade math teacher, and my favorite teacher was a math teacher. Her name was Ms. Holman from Roper Middle School, and now it's Ronald H. Brown Middle School for Boys in Washington, D.C. And she had the tough love approach, and I think I have the same approach as a teacher as well. Mm-hmm. And everyone who went to Roper, they always remember this quote that she used to give us, which was, "Excuses are tools of the incompetent. Mm. You build bridges to nowhere and monuments of nothingness. So what she always taught us.
I wonder where that came from.
I mean, whatever your goals are, whatever you set your mind to it, just do it. There are no excuses. But I do want to use this platform as well to talk about the WPU, the union and the government.
Real quick, Ms. Humphreys, because we've got a lot of people on the line, but make your point. Because
talk about our retro pay.
Well, yeah, but hold on. I was going to say real quick, because that was a point that I was going to bring up. So, but please make your point real quick.
Yes, I just want to say, you know, it was kind of, it was inappropriate for them on the day we start Teacher Appreciation Week to tell us that we wasn't going to receive our retro pay. Mm. And I just think that they could have chose a better time to tell us that. I think that a lot of teachers already feel, you know, unappreciated, and it just could have been a better time. I understand budgeting and everything, but, you know, don't hurt our feelings like that, because people made plans and everything. I have daycare expenses that I planned on paying with that money, and I just think it's unfair. So anybody who is for teachers, I wish you write to the Washington, D.C. mayor and the council members and let them know that was not fair. And to give the teachers their raises that they deserve since 2020, 2021, 2022, and now 2023. So thank you so much for letting me announce that and say what I needed to say. I appreciate it. You guys have a blessed
day. Sure thing. Thank you so much, Ms. Humphreys. And to that point, that is, as you know, I'm sure both of you know, that there's going to be a delay in the retro pay for DC teachers. This was, of course, negotiated, but because of budget issues, there's going to be a payment made this month and then some made, you know, next month. And to Ms. Humphreys' point, you know, people have bills and there is an expectation of that. And all of this kind of collides with, you know, the realities of budgets and where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So certainly something that all of us have to consider. Let's go to Ken. Ken calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Ken. What's on your mind?
Thank you. And thank you for educators that are critical to our survivability in America, let alone in the world. But I definitely want to shout out Ms. Page, first grade teacher, Cannon Street Elementary School, Newark, New Jersey. Most wonderful woman I think I've ever met in my life, you know, outside of my mother, that left a significant impact on me. But I think to address also the equity issue is that at that same system in Newark, Mark Zuckerberg gave a $100 million donation. So as much as we have an equity shortfall, we also have an issue with distribution of these funds, how we control our money where it goes, because money does go into our communities. We just don't have gained access to it to appropriate it and put it in the proper places.
Ken, thank you so much for your phone call. Terrence calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Terrence. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, my name is Terrence. Now, I'm calling from Virginia, but I actually went to school in South Jersey. And my favorite teacher was a gentleman by the name of Owen Murphy, a 20-something white man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember him, and he is the only teacher I've ever had whose full name I recall. And the main reason is because he got us. He got me. He got us.
Mm.
He was using something back then, and believe me, this is quite some time ago, that some of the school systems learned about a few years ago called differentiated instruction.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what is that for the non-teachers in the room?
Oh, a differentiated instruction is, how should I put this, is a program or an understanding by the teacher that all students don't learn the same way and at the same rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he used, some students use hands-on tactile, if you will. Some students can open up a book, read it, and get straight A's. And others have to be talked to and taught. Mm-hmm. And there are combinations of all three as well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he got this back then, so much so that the year that I had him in school, I was an excellent student. Every year after that was horrible, to where I actually became a high school dropout. Let me clap. Well, I was a high school dropout. I went on to join the military. I quit school at 17, joined the military, retired. In my second career, I went to school, got my high school diploma, my undergraduate and my graduate degree, and taught for 23 years teaching math and science.
Amazing.
Amazing. That's an amazing story, man.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you without a doubt, I formulated my understanding of an educator after Mr. Murphy.
Well, Terrence, thank you so much, and we certainly salute your teacher and your educational achievements as well. So thank you so much for giving us a call. Before I go back to the phone lines, I wanted to ask, you know, Dr. Norris about some of the other educational challenges as we have seen education change, not just over the past handful of years, but even over the past, you know, 50 years or so, where some of the basic bits of, some of the basic foundations of what we expect children to learn by the time they get out of high school may be lacking. Mm-hmm. Grammar, for example, mathematics, mm-hmm. and certainly we know that you know, being literacy is a horrific challenge in this country. What is going on with those reading, writing, and arithmetic thing?
Yeah, so I think that we are in a very different time. So we're a lot of teachers are struggling with this idea of technology, how to best use technology, and how technology interfaces with education. So we have students that their attention spans have now changed because of the amount of time that they spend on technology, or teachers that are battling with this idea of the cell phone or the tablet, and how, so our students are used to quick snippets like they do on TikTok and quick, so for us to get these students, we have to begin to look at how we're providing instruction and how that needs to change, and how we can actually incorporate it in a way that we can enhance the education. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge for our teachers, but our teachers are up to it. I've seen some really amazing things. We're looking at things like our literacy, because kids are reading less sometimes. So we need to make sure that we're making sure that the books are in their hands and that they're able to do the reading. But we have some things that we're going up against in a way that we hadn't had to deal with 20 or 30 years ago.
But, you know, and I remember when I was in college, and that was pre-internet. You know, that was chatbots and pre all yes. of the technology, when you had to reserve time on the computer and all of that. But I remember, and this was one of the most difficult times, one of the most difficult observations that was made when I was in college, and it had nothing to do with me, but a teacher had us read out loud, mm-hmm. and one of my college colleagues could not. Mm-hmm. And that was really frightening to me, mm-hmm. because reading was such a big part of my development. Mm-hmm. My parents forced me to read until they had to force me to stop reading, because I was reading so much that I wasn't doing whatever with all the mm-hmm. other things around the house yeah. that they needed me to do, which is a good problem to have. And, what is your experience, Austin, as it relates to, those foundational things and dealing with boys? Because, it's almost like girls read, mm-hmm. More than boys. Women read a lot of times more than men.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think this is the modern day question that is what a lot of educators and school districts are really trying to figure out. The literacy, I kind of define literacy as reading, writing, speaking, listening, researching, and asking questions. So it's I can teach literacy through any one of those things, but my goal is to teach them all at once, to let them know that you have a lot of different resources at your disposal and a lot of different skills when it comes to this thing called being literate. I think once I've expanded that understanding for a lot of the boys that I teach, their understanding of what literacy is grows. Because I think if I limited it to just being able to read this text, if they can't do it, they've already mm-hmm. cut themselves off at the knee and they're done. But if you say, no, if you can't read it, or if you're struggling with reading it, we can have a dialogical approach where we can talk about it. If you're not necessarily a speaker, you can listen to it. Mm-hmm. There's all these different kind of modalities that you can attack literacy with, you know. And ultimately, once they gain one skill, they kind of get hungry for more. So when I first started with my class, now we had a reading issue. We had mm-hmm. a reading issue. Mm-hmm. Now I mean, we finished three novels this year, mm-hmm. just this year. Projects, papers, you name it, you know. Some of them say they want to be writers now. So it's just really a matter of repetition, but also expanding what literacy or the idea of what literacy is into some of the skills that they already have. And once they realize, hey, I can listen, I can speak, I can, the confidence grows, and then you can't, then it's on. You
know, yeah, the fire's sky's ignited. The limit. Exactly. Yeah.
The fire's ignited.
So one of the things that we have to think about as well when it comes to, because you're talking about the boys in your classroom, most of our classrooms are run by females in elementary school. And we give what we like, right? So research has shown that boys like nonfiction reading materials, and a lot of times we're reading fairy tales and those kinds of things. So we have to expand what we're offering our kids to read, whether it be magazines, whether it be nonfiction, because even men, a lot of men that do read, mostly read nonfiction materials.
They read business information,
business, right? Sports,
things about finance and sports. And
so we need to think about that as well when we're presenting our kids with what we need to give them what they like as well.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines. Kendra calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Kendra. What's on your mind? Kendra, are you there? Kendra, give us a call back if you can. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joe, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Errol, I just want to dedicate this day for my teacher, Miss Leola Briscoe, my English teacher, class of 1980, Theodore Roosevelt High School. She made me read and read. I had to learn Macbeth up and down. Mm-hmm. I had to do my research paper over and over again. And when I finally got it done, oh, and by the way, back then they could smack you in the back of the head for acting up. I set a record. That's why I'm punch drunk now. Okay? She taught me, and I mean, she changed my whole life. And she lived to be 96. She took my paper after I graduated. She took it down to the city, you know, the district building. And I had no idea it was a research paper essay contest. I ended up winning. Mm. And my paper was on Rats, Washington's newest army, okay? Wow. And here it is now, 41 years later, 42, whatever. I'm 60 now. But I'm ready to revise it and call Rats, Washington's ones in Congress. I'm talking about the mammals that run on four legs. Okay.
Oh. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your phone call. Let's go to Ginger. Ginger calling from Hyattsville. Ginger, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Ginger, are you there? Give me a call back. Let's go to Edith calling from Maryland. Edith, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have two favorite teachers I'd like to shout out. One was Sister Helen Marie, and that was when I was in the fourth grade, and that was almost 50 years ago. Yeah, 50 years ago or so. And she just would play jump rope with us and let us braid her hair, and she was just she just loved on all of us. And then my next favorite teacher was Mrs. Emma Fleming. She was our 7th and 8th grade English teacher, and I am the writer that I am because of her.
Mm. Edith, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Obviously, you know, Dr. Norris, you are... Are you still teaching?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So what is it that you look for? What makes a good teacher?
Yes, so that's a really good question. I think that there are a lot of components together to make a good teacher, but someone that is able to be passionate about what it is that they do, someone that loves, I mean, most people go into teaching because they have a love for students, even if they come into it as a second career. They love what they do. You know, people always talk about, and I hear all these negative narratives about teaching, but when you talk to the teachers that are in the classroom, that are staying, they're there because they love it. Mm-hmm. You know, I teach because I love it. You know, as department chair, I don't always have to teach a class, but last year I taught a reading assessment class that my students were in the school. Name the school for me again.
Bishop Walker.
Yep. Yeah. So, you're looking for someone that's passionate. You're looking for someone that cares about their students. You're looking for someone that understands pedagogy and understands how to offer that and get those students to be able to learn.
What is it about teaching that you miss? Because, as you said, you don't always have a chance to teach a class, and you know, you're teaching college students. Obviously, mm-hmm. That's a different animal.
Yes. Yeah.
What is it that you miss about the what we would call, I guess, the traditional, you know, primary mm-hmm. and secondary education? Teaching.
Yes. One of the things that I miss, I always, whatever school I was in, I did extracurricular activities. And so I always did theater with the kids and dance with the kids, and we put on productions. And that's something that I miss. That's a piece that I don't really get to do at the college level. But what we did was we took what I taught in the classroom, in the literacy, in the literature, and in social studies, and we put it into a production. And I loved doing that. The students loved it, and it really brought alive, you know, what I was doing in the classroom, and that I miss.
I mentioned earlier that I'm a big fan of Abbott Elementary. I mean, I think it's really well written. Obviously, it earned Cheryl Lee Ralph. She earned an Emmy. The show itself, earned an Emmy. But, for people on the outside looking in, Austin, I'm assuming you're a fan.
I've only seen a few episodes. Don't kill me.
Okay, what kind of teacher are you?
I know.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
It is one of the greatest shows.
I feel sorry for myself. I don't get to watch TV as much, and I just miss. I've watched two episodes, and I thought they were excellent.
I never miss it because I think that it is, comedy aside, I think the characters are so accurate. Mm-hmm. Although, the principal, I don't think that's not
right.
Well, I don't think we have, a lot of clueless principals out there. Dr. Norris, what your thoughts about the show?
So I have to also confess.
Okay, I'm
from Philadelphia, and I have people all the time fussing at me. But I promise I'm watching it this summer.
Okay, so we'll have this conversation in a
yes.
year.
Yes.
you talk about pedagogy. Yeah. How about just reading, writing, and paying attention? Go stand in the corner.
Yeah. We don't get a whole lot of TV time.
I'm gonna put you in the corner.
The weekday thing is hard during the weekdays to catch it.
So what about that? Because I think that is part of it. You talk about bringing your work home with you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
How do you balance that?
Yeah, I think I've heard teachers do all different types of things. I know for me, I've kind of gotten in a groove with the curriculum and kind of my approach. So, I do a lot of stuff while we're in class. I don't necessarily wait to take work home. You know, I've given out an assignment, especially now that we're talking about technology, I don't even pass papers out. You know, I don't have hard copies of papers. Mm-hmm. Everything is on my Google Classroom, and mm-hmm. when they upload the papers, I can, open it up. I can see what they've done. I can revise it, send it back to them. So it's a little bit easier as what the traditional grading papers model would be, with the marker and the red pen and things like that. That's not necessarily how we get down in our class. So I don't necessarily have to take my work home with me, more than I have to be thoughtful about the projects and the writing assignments and kind of like the larger idea stuff, the big picture stuff I have to be thoughtful with. But I don't have to take my work home with me as much as I did maybe like the first year or two.
Outside of bigger paychecks, mm-hmm. and adequate resources, what do you believe teachers need to do the job that they want to do and that they believe they need to do to have the best educated students?
I think one of the biggest things is we need to be able to teach the truth. We need to be able to teach the curriculum the way the curriculum needs to be taught. Right now we have legislation telling us that we have to ban all of these books, and we can't even read the autobiography of Rosa Parks in some classrooms. So one of the biggest things across the nation is we need to be able to do what we were prepared to do, which is to teach our students. The other thing I would say is we definitely need support and an understanding of what the profession is. You know, we have so many people. There are some school districts I know in Philadelphia that are talking about teachers that go on maternity leave have to borrow sick days, accumulate sick days in order, because they don't have a maternity leave, or all kinds of issues that teachers are facing they should not be facing in 2023.
Same question.
Yeah. And for fear of saying all the same things that Dr. Norris said, I'm going to go with parent partnerships. I think that whatever the future of education is, it's going to be through parent partnerships. We've seen so many different statistics, especially in this area around, Montgomery County versus Prince George's County and D.C. when it comes to achievement levels and things of that nature. And, we use a village mindset at our school, and it really does take a village in the sense of K through five. We really need parents to be on board with what we're learning. And it doesn't mean that they have to teach their kids all the same ways that we are. But just simply being on board with what we're learning and reinforcing some of the soft skills like discipline, reinforcing some of the soft skills like commitment and effort. These things go a long way when it comes to achievement and progress in the classroom. So, and teachers should be pushing for that. That isn't necessarily the parent's job to try to figure out what's best for their child. It's more so the teacher's job to kind of reach out and figure out, hey, here's what we're doing in mm-hmm. class. These are the things that we're reinforcing. Would love if we can be partners in this mm-hmm. in this thing, so that parents feel empowered mm-hmm. to kind of be their child's teacher at home.
You know, piggybacking on that topic, I remember back in the early 2000s when I worked for the NBC affiliate in Kansas City, Missouri. And for those who don't know, Kansas City is a lot like D.C. in that it sits on a state border. So to the west, you have Kansas, and to the east, you have Missouri. But in Overland Park, Kansas, which is a wealthy suburb, mm-hmm. A middle class and upper middle class suburb, I often found myself in standing room only school board meetings mm-hmm. with predominantly white mm-hmm. Parent participation mm-hmm. just because. And yet in a lot of black communities, not just there, but we often see it here, that black parents often only show up when something is wrong. Mm-hmm. How can teachers get parents to come just because?
So I'm glad you brought up parent partnerships. My first textbook was an edited volume with Dr. Chartria Collier, and it was social justice and parent partnerships in multicultural context. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that in the text. We talk about how we can get parents involved in our communities and people. We had all these authors show what they were doing, and they were doing some amazing things. And it's about looking at things differently, you know, looking at how we engage parents and how we involve ourselves in the community in a different way. And there were authors that talked about all kinds of things, like there was one school that really struggled to get the parents to come in for parent-teacher conference, and they changed the location and held it at the nearby church and had 100% participation. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we have to think about what are we doing and how can we do something a little bit differently to engage those families and those parents.
Yeah, because I was fascinated mm-hmm. back then, you know, particularly having, although spending time in other cities, but and I found also in Buffalo, New York, mm-hmm. it was very, very much the same thing. Mm-hmm. Where in Buffalo City, unless there was something wrong, and mm-hmm. again, you were talking about during the 1990s, I don't know mm-hmm. what's happening there now, but when something was wrong, then you had all the black mm-hmm. parents show up. But if you went out to Williamsville, which mm-hmm. is, you know, or Orchard Park, where the Buffalo Bills mm-hmm. Stadium is, or those suburbs, you know, it was like a lottery to get in and find mm-hmm. a seat mm-hmm. because for whatever reason, economic, social, and one could argue that the parents today, considering the political climate, are very different mm-hmm. from those then. We didn't have some of the struggles that we're having mm-hmm. now as far as diversity and the books and what was in there. So it's a whole shebang now, a very, very different world. Mm-hmm. But I would say that it is so important to have, you know, parents participate. Because there were so many times when I was growing up where I wish my parents had not participated.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, after a visit to the principal's office. Right. You know, why do you care so much? I really want to thank both of you for coming in and sharing your insight, your thoughts. Austin, I'm proud of you and the things that you've done. I think you're a great, great role model for these young boys. And of course, you know, Dr. Norris, I think you are also a great role model for our future teachers as well. And I
think you are
one of the many prides of Howard University.
Yes. Thank you so much.
So thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, May 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.